it's a great story how I got this safer. It's actually really good, and I enjoyed it, but someone got it as a gift, and I saw it on their desk for a very long time, and it just, like, sat there, and then, like, they left where they were working, and then all of a sudden, like, it moved into someone else's, like, you know, desk, and I went to their office. I was like, so weird, like, you have the same safer as the other person. Like, no, the person left and dumped it on my desk. I was like, do you plan on using it, reading it, anything? They're like, nope. Do you want it? I was like, absolutely. So I took it last summer, but I had no room in my bags last summer when I went to Israel. So I was like, I'm going to leave this on the shelf here, and then I'm going to, like, you know, save it for the summer. So the Chabura was, like, you know, coming last Shabbos, and I took it out. And he has, like, three pieces on Parshas Matos Maaseh, which is, like, so weird. He only has, like, 13 articles in the whole book, and three of them are on Matos Maaseh. So I was like, all right, that works. So I want to share with you one of them. It was the first one, and it was a really, really interesting idea by Rabbi Helfgott. So we're going to quickly run through the first paragraph. And again, it's like not, I don't think there's anything in there that's, like, you know, super charged with information. But there should be an obvious question that's jumping out, which should be, why do we have so much space dedicated to this? So what is this? This is paragraph in Aleph. So Hashem says to Moshe, I want you to go count the amount of loot, right, that you have by both of man and of animal, you and Elazar HaKohen and all the heads of the tribes. It's an interesting concept that they would take the total amount of spoils, and they would divide it between those that went out to war and those that didn't. So even if you didn't go out to war, you still had a portion in it, but if, in this case, 12,000 soldiers went out to war, they get 50%, and then you're talking about 588,000 people didn't go out to war, they split the other 50%. And then there is a tax that's paid. 1/500th is taken as a tax from those that go out to war. It's taken as a tax and it's given as truma to Elazar HaKohen, to God. And then from the other side, right, the side of those that did not go out to war, so they get hit with a 1/50th tax, so 2% of everything, and that's given to the Levim, Shomer Mishmeret Hashem. Mishkan Hashem. It is interesting, and notice this all these years. Probably because we don't spend that much time on these psukim, but why is it that one is a 500th and one is a 50th, and it's given to the Kohen gets the 500th, and the Levi gets the 1/50th, which is interesting because that is, if you look at Truma and Meiser, I think the numbers are fairly similar. It's about, you know, 10 times.
Well, if you run the numbers, which I'm trying to think, that 1/500th of the warrior's portion,
okay,
it's probably going to come out to about more than per piece than the 1/50th of it, because it's if 12,000, if there are only 12,000, half of it is being split between 12,000 people.
Okay.
So
as long as it's 12,000, it's
I'm saying it's
correct. 500th half. Oh, but if a 50th.
Right. Meaning it's half, if there's so. Right if there right.
How
it's,
many,
no matter how many people. Right. I suppose.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question, right? Like, if there are, like, the Kohen Levi take could be, the Kohanim could end up taking a lot more, even though they're only getting a 500th, because there are so many fewer Kohanim.
Well, like I said, but it really doesn't matter, right? It's pretty important, but it's also, yeah. So it's the same thing. The Kohanim get 12, as a gross, get 10 times as much as, right, as the Levium. It's
10 times, right, 10 times less.
But there's three of them.
There might be only...
Yeah, right, it could be that there's... I mean, there's we have 22,000 Levium-ish, yeah, and Kohanim. Okay, so it's a little bit later on. It's 40 years later. But really, I mean, what do you have? You have Aaron. Okay, he's dead, so then he's not getting anything. So you have Elazar and Itamar. Pinchas. And if Elazar and Itamar have any kids that were born afterwards. And if any, I guess if there are any at this point in time, it could be their grandchildren. So if there are any grandchildren, so they would be. You could be, right? You could be talking about like five or six, even. But even if I say 50, so you're right. What the Kohen is going to walk away with in his pocket would seemingly be a lot more than what the Levium are getting. But it is interesting. I can't even explain why it is, because this is only the first time I'm noticing that. Okay, Vayas Moshe Velazar Kohen, Kasher Tzivah Hashem Moshe. They did everything that they were told. Interesting that it says Kasher Tzivah Hashem Moshe. Hopefully we'll get back to that in a little bit. Vayi Amal Koach Yeter Bazar Shabazu Ametzavat Tzon Sheshmot Elef Shivim Elef Chameshet Elefim. So how much did they get? So in terms of sheep, so it's 600,000. I'm sorry, 670,000. 675,000 sheep. All right, that's a lot of sheep. Ubakar shnayim v'shem elef, and 72,000 large animals. Zachamurim mechav v'shishem elef, 61,000 donkeys. Nefesh adam and anashim shal yadu mishkav zachar kol nefesh shnayim v'shalishem elef. And they found, and they had 32,000 virgin women. Batia mechza chilak yutzim etzavah misfar atzon shlosh meot elef v'shosh elef v'shiv elef tim chamesh meot. Okay, they had half of whatever that big number of flock was. Batia mechaz l'shem and atzon shesh meot. The chamesh v'shivim. So they had to give 675 sheep. Babakar shisha u'shloshim alef u'michsam l'shem shnayim v'shivim. So 72 cows or big animals. Chamesh shoshim alef v'chamesh meot u'michsam l'shem echa v'shishim. 61 donkeys. V'nefesh adam shisha sar alef u'michsam l'shem shnayim u'shloshim nefesh. So 32 women were given to God.
Whatever that means.
I don't know. I'm saying like, but I'm saying what, like, I guess, right? Like they could sell them as slaves. So like what? How? What else would you do with them? Right? I mean, the donkeys are in the same boat. What do you do with those? Like they're not offering them as sacrifices. Okay, so maybe
You rent them out.
Yeah, okay. Can't really rent the women out. I don't know how you can do with that. But I assume that they were sold as slaves.
Oh, day labor.
All right, what else?
And the others?
Or maybe.
The others went the others went as captives to the people. They were slaves anyway.
It seems odd that somebody had to decide which of the animals went in what direction. But somebody also had to decide the women who were people. Well, that just seems like a strange.
Yeah, that's hard, right? Like, because animals, like at the end of the day, like. Right, like when you, I don't know, if you ever went to the fetters for like, you know, kaparos, so like, I don't know, you just get a chicken, like, I don't know, it's like luck of the draw, but there's no like
real.
Cattle,
you're on a meat market, there are different ones, but
you're not really.
Qualitatively, right, I'm saying it's not like.
Some of them are a little, you know.
Right, I hear, yeah, it's.
Okay, so why are all these people giving us the numbers when they gave us the formulas? What's the point? They didn't have calculators, but we do, I mean, why?
Right. Okay. So that's a good question. I think the bigger question on top of this is, why do I even need all this? Right. Like, just can't we like sum this up in like two or three psukim? They got a lot of stuff, and they divided it. And like, does it really matter? You know. Okay. So there were 675,000 like sheep. And now what?
So we know why Hashem counted the Jews so many times, because he loved them before he killed them. But the animals, well, that can't possibly be the same explanation.
I don't think the point is, about the animals. I guess it's about to show how much they captured, or like how.
What if it just said hundreds, several, whatever the translation would be, several hundred thousand animals? Would we not then be impressed also?
Yeah.
So why? Right? Why the detail? Why the detail?
It shows how much more the soldiers get than.
Could have told us that too. And soldiers got half, and everybody else got the other half.
Right, but I guess it's kind of given the quantitative feeling of.
This is going to make the transparency.
70,000 sheep.
Several.
And 335,000 go to 12,000 people, and 335,000 go to 580.
It's still
transparency thing. Yeah, at the time when they're recording exactly how much they spent.
So they had to do it correctly, but we don't have to know for all terms.
Right, just putting it right. If you throw in the words kasher, tzivah, shem, oshah, like you should be good. There's a pasuk in Shmini, Chozera Zerua Sharizareya Tahorhu, right? It's like one pasuk. I might have messed it up. My bar mitzvah teacher will forgive me. Right? But like That's the whole pasuk. If you look through Shas, and I'm by no means an expert in Shas, but I've seen enough of that pasuk in so many different mesechtas. Everybody sits there and really pours over that pasuk. It's so not clear, and the Gemara and the Mishnayos, I see it more in the Mishnayos, spend so much time on it. And here, right, we got all that to tell us what. What does it really add to anything? The answer is not much. So to figure out why is that. So Rabbi Helfgott says, to understand this, we need to look at the war and understand the war a little bit better. So we're working backwards. We're going now to the beginning of the parasha, which is Nekom Nikmat Bnei Yisrael Meitam Vidyanim Achar Teisef Alamecha. So God tells Moshe, I want you to tell the Jewish people that we're going to avenge the Midyanim, and then you're going to die. So what kind of war is this? So we know of generally of two types of wars. Right? What do we have? We have wars of... Right, okay. So that's true. Okay, maybe we have different ways of categorizing it, but I guess besides Milchemes Mitzvah, Milchemes Rishus, and there's a third one also, but generally there's we think of war as there's either defensive wars or offensive wars, wars of conquest.
Is something happening?
No, I have Chibur at 9 o'clock. We do it down here, but you do it now.
How many are you? How many are you? A bunch?
Five. I think if we can take them, one.
No. We're happy to share the room.
Yeah. I gotta
say, we share the room. We're not that loud.
So generally, we think about wars as defensive wars. Someone attacks you, so you have to defend yourself. Or they're offensive wars. Right? So in that case, we would really look at it as defensive or conquest. The Jewish people are going to go into the land of Israel. They have to conquer the land. But there's also defensive wars. You can have Amalek is going to attack. People that aren't necessarily part of the land of Israel are going to attack. But where does this war fit in? It's not really. There's defensive. Midian is in Midian. They're not there. And to say it's a conquest, I don't know, they don't take the, it doesn't seem like there's any indication that they take the land. They just destroy the people.
It's a bank robbery.
So it is, it's revenge, right? So you probably avenge is better than the word revenge, right? But the Torah says, Nekom Nikmat, right? What is that? That's Nekama, right? You have to go out and you have to take vengeance on the Midyanim. Midyan. 12,000 people are going to war. So they have you could ask the question, why do we need this pasuk, right? We're pretty good. There's 1,000 per shevet, 12 shvatim. Why do I need this? But I think sometimes the Torah does the math for us. It's not the only place that we have that. So they sent out Pinchas ben Elazar HaKohen with the army. Why Pinchas?
Because he's
an avenger. Okay, good. So either because he's Mr. Kanai, that's what he does. That's one possibility. There also is another possibility that he started it, right? He started by killing Cosby and Zimri. Okay, so now you started, you finished it. But Rashi's not even so sure about it, because Rashi also ends up suggesting that Pinchas is the Mashuach Milchama, which is a special Kohen that goes out at war to basically tell the people, you gotta be brave, you gotta be tough. He gives them chizuk, and then after he's done giving them...
If you fall into any of these categories, you don't have to go.
Right, and then after all that, once everybody's okay, these are our guys, we're going out to war, so if someone says, I'm not going, he beats them up. Yep. Right? He takes his stick and he smacks them in their shins. They're like, you've reached the point of no return. You didn't have any reason to go back until now. Now you're afraid? Well, once one person gets afraid, everybody's afraid, and then we lose the war.
Would he do that vote as a Kohen?
Did he do that vote as a Kohen?
He was kind of the free agent.
I think he does.
He was available.
I think he does eventually become the Kohen Gadol. You're saying, why would he be the Mashuach Milchama? Because, there's no one else, right? Elazar is the Kohen Gadol. I don't know. I mean, maybe Tamar. What was he doing? He's the backup Kohen Gadol.
I thought it was not like Pinchas Bedeck did not act in the role of it.
For some reason, I'm thinking that somewhere along the timeline, he becomes the Kohen Gadol, but I could be making that up. Okay, so what happens? They have chatzotzos, the whole thing, right? And they fight with Midian just as God had commanded. And they kill all the men. V'malchei Midian hargu al chaleim, et evi derekam, et tur v'chur, et reva, chamesh malchei Midian, v'bilam benor hargu b'charev. And they kill the five kings, and they kill Bilam. Rashi has a wild medrash that says that the kings actually, and Bilam too, had the ability to fly. I don't have that magic card. It's like a famous Rashi. Every year I forget this Rashi, and then I see it, and I'm like, right, yeah. They were flying, and then Pinchas lifted up the tzitz towards them, and like they fell out of the air. And then they died al chaleim. I'm like, all right. It was like a little Harry Potter-ish, but okay. And they take all of this loot. How much loot? See the psukim afterwards. And they raise the cities and burn them to the ground. They proudly bring all their stuff back. Look, Moshe, look how much we brought. So what happens? Pasuk Gimel. So the question is, how does Moshe feel about all this? Moshe and Elazar come out with the Nesi Aida to greet them. It actually, this story does remind me a little bit of, and I didn't see anybody that makes the connection, but could be that I'm totally off, or it could be that other people to make the connection. It feels a little bit like when Shaul comes back from Amalek. Right? Like he comes back and he's like, so proud, look what we did. And Shaul's like, no. He's like, why? I asked you one thing. Bring nothing back. Just destroy it. Why are you like so happy that you brought back the sheep? The Jews, now it's not so clear. What are they told to do? Nikom nikmat b'nei yisomi at midyanim. Well, I don't know. It doesn't say that they were supposed to not bring anything back. So what happens? Like, so Moshe al kudei achayel sari alafim sari meo b'rabim mitzayim b'chama. Moshe goes nuts. What were you doing? What were you thinking? So he yells at and he screams at who? The leaders. He's like, you guys were like the officers out there? Like, why did you bring it back? Moshe. So Moshe's complaint should tell us what really bothers him. How did you let the women survive? These were the women that made the Jewish people sin. Rashi says it was like worse than that. It was like that guy over there, yeah, he was Chaim's woman. Right? Like, people were able to point out and say, like, these are the women that made man X, Y, and Z sin.
But didn't go and the count of the women said they specified that these were virgin women. So these are the women who were not.
Afterwards. So we've got like a little bit of time here. So they come up with like this great, like, it's almost like a SOTA test where they like, they test the women and they're like, okay, you're right, you turned like that, kill her. Not because the criteria were she had to be she couldn't be capable of being able, I think, to be able to have a child yet. But how do you know that? Like, it's like she's 11, she's 12, she's 9. Like, what? So God said these are the women that could live, and these are the women that could die, which probably was a little bit easier for like the Jews, because otherwise it's like, you know, how do you pick? So that's what happens. And he says there was a magefa b'adat Hashem. So what is going on here? So first of all, why does Moshe get so upset? So it seems like Moshe gets upset. Why?
Because like expecting it, but he didn't tell him not to. It's not like he just says go out and.
Right. So it seems like Moshe felt like intuitively like should have figured this out, right? Like the men of Midian were not the problem. It was the women of Midian that were the problem. So when you proudly come back and you're like, look, I mean, and how many women did they bring back, right? What did we say? 32,000 women. It's not like he brought back like 5 or 6 women and he's like, all right, this guy's just got like an Eishes Yifas Toar problem. That's why we brought her back. Not like 30, it's a lot of people.
Where's Pinchas and all this?
Yeah, that's true.
He sent them with him. Just.
All right, so why didn't Pinchas? It's interesting because Rashi says something fascinating. Afterwards, they don't know what to do. Like, they have all these, like, dishes. They're like, what do we do with it? Like, they've never had, like, Hechsher Kalim before. So Moshe doesn't know the answer. And Elazar is the one that paskins and says, okay, I'll tell you what the halacha is. The halacha is blah, blah, blah. So Rashi says, why is it that Elazar got the halacha? Because Moshe got upset. And because Moshe got upset, so his punishment was that he didn't remember the halacha. It's like interesting how that... So according to Rashi, it turns out that Rashi feels that Moshe might have been wrong. So I don't know. Okay, so we're still stuck with one big question. Why do we have so much space given to this one story? It's a story that does not seem to add all that much. We just don't understand why it's there. So to take a look, to do that, he says you have to take one step. You have to go one step back, and you have to actually look at the sin itself. He says, I'm good with whatever you want. We can move down. I'll try to be a little softer in my voice. The recording is like a true chabura with like all the running commentary. So he says that in order to understand it a little bit better, you have to really look at the sin itself and try to understand that, try to understand the nature of the sin. So now we're going back to Parshas Balak, and we have the end of Balak. Vayeshev Yisrael v'Shitim, Vayachal Am Liznot, El Benot Moav. So the Jewish people are in Shitim, and this is right after Bilam tried cursing the Jewish people unsuccessfully, and the people begin to stray with a Benot Moav. So the Medrash explains the story a little bit, like the Jewish people went shopping in the bazaars of Moav, and they would go in, and there was like an old, ugly-looking lady in the front, and she would be like, hey, you know, you could buy it for me, and blah, 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 and, you know, like, I'm sure it was, like, haggling over the price. And then what would happen? She'd be like, listen, in the back, there's better merchandise. And in the back, the saleswoman was, you know, much younger and dressed in a much more provocative way. And they ended up sinning with those women and all that. So that's the story of the Tikran Alam Lezivchei Elohim. And all of a sudden, these like these men that went to buy stuff are bringing korbanos to the gods. And they're bowing to their gods. And the Jewish people are like clinging to Baal Peor. And God is angry with these Jewish people. So God says, you know, listen, this is what we're going to do. Everybody will be stood in front of the sun. The sun will reveal who is what and who sinned and who didn't. And then we'll know what, you know, who should die. So Moshe says to the judges of Israel, I want you to kill those people, like tzamud, connected. So the Medrash actually says that tzamud is from like tzmidim, or bracelets. Why? Because bracelets are right tightly around a person's wrist. Now, this after all this, this is what's so crazy. After all this, Zimri comes and says, you know, he brings this Midianite woman in front of Moshe and all the Jewish people, him, Bochim Petach Olam Moed. Everybody's crying, they don't know what's going to be. And he says, can I marry this, can I sleep with this woman or not? And the Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron Kohen, Vayakom Tocha Itav, Yikach Romach Biado. Gets up, he takes his spear, Vayavochar Ish Yisrael, Alukubav, Et Korchtem Ish Yisrael, Vateshal Kabatav, Tezar Megapam Me'albin Yisrael. Takes his spear, he goes from the back of the man. There, the two of them are having relations. So he goes from the back of one and comes out the back of the other. And he stabs them, puts them on a stick, and then brings them out. And there are 24,000 people that die in this magefa.
So this is the only image in the general. Everybody else was Moab.
So it seems. So, right, so why is it that Nekom become Midian? So who is the one that, right, Vayar Balak ben Tzippor, Melech Moav? Balak was from Moav, so why is it? So first of all, Balak is really possibly from Midian, and he just became the king there. I think the Midianite women maybe are the other women, meaning like, you have, I guess that somewhere. Either they're the front women or the back women, but they are definitely some of the women involved in this. So this story sounds like a different story in the Torah. What story does it sound like? So Rabbi Helfgott says it's actually, maybe the story itself is not as clearly connected to Chet HaEgel, but if you look at the language is like mirroring Chet HaEgel. And he says that it is the second generation's Chet HaEgel. So he says, like, what are some of the things? Vayachal am liznot. So if you take a look at the source below, kishiched amcha, right? It's the am that sins. Liznot. So later on, right, we have the word zana by Chet HaEgel. And when we have in Pasuk Vav, vayakum letzacheg, so Rashi says letzacheg is legila arayos, which is nos. Vayicharaf Hashem, God gets angry. If you take a look at the last line of the next source, Shuv Mecharon Apecha, God was also angry. What happens after Chet HaEgel? Right, Moshe Rabbeinu gets up and says, Mila Shem Elai, who comes? Levi. What does Levi do? They go and kill people. There's a battle. The hero in Chet HaEgel is Shevet Levi, and the hero here is Pinchas, who's also from Shevet Levi. How do they die? So the romach is pretty similar to a sword, and by Chet HaEgel, they take a sword and they kill it, and then the Medrash actually connects the word tzemet. What?
Romach is a spear.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's similar to like
weapon of whatever.
So some tzemet we have that here by tzemet Yisrael v'alpor. The Medrash actually connects Chet HaEgel to tzamad. They say that the Jewish people were like tzamud. They were like connected and like tied to this egel. So these are a lot of connections. So what are we supposed to make of that? Are we just supposed to say, okay, well, this is God's way of saying Dor Rishon, Dor Sheni, they're the same thing, the challenges of one or the challenges of the other? It's possible. So a suggestion, though, is that the difference might be the reaction. In Dor Rishon, how is the where does salvation come by Chet HaEgel? How are the Jews saved before Levi even comes on the scene? So Moshe is the one. You have this leader that has to come in, and he's the one that orchestrates everything. What happens in the second story? It's actually not really a leader. It's someone it's from within the people. Pinchas is more of a regular person than he is a leader. He emerges from within the people to take care of it. And that perhaps shows that there is growth on behalf of the Jewish people. So that's that is a possibility. Another possibility that he suggests, that Rabbi Helfgott suggests, is that the end result of the Egel and the end result of the Mishkan, the end result of the Egel and the end result of this, is that both of them have like a lot of stuff collected. Why is a lot of stuff collected? So by Chet HaEgel, all the stuff that's collected is for what? After.
The Mishkan.
The Jewish people build the Mishkan. And what's the purpose of the Mishkan? It's Truma. And the Truma is supposed to create a place, Kasher Tziva Hashem at Moshe, that God commands Moshe. Look at the end of Pekudei. Kasher Tziva Hashem at Moshe is time and time and time again. Kasher Tziva Hashem at Moshe also comes a lot of times in our Parsha. So that's another connection. But really, the piece of connection between both of them is that both the end result of the Chet HaEgel and the end result of the of this story is the word Lifnei Hashem. The goal is to bring everybody back before Hashem. And so I thought perhaps you could suggest the following: is that intrinsically within the Jewish people is there's push to come Lifnei Hashem. We're going to sin many, 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 many times over the course of time. But in the end, what always happens? We always come back to our source, which is Lifnei Hashem. And perhaps both Dor Rishon and Dor Sheni experience this. They do sins of tremendous magnitude. But in the end, they do come back Lifnei Hashem. So I want to end with a story. It is a true story that happened to to me today. So I was driving home from camp, and I get a phone call from one of my bus counselors. I'm like, it's still too early. Like, you shouldn't be back in, like, where you're supposed to be. But maybe you're calling because, you know, a parent, like, was in touch with you or whatever. So he calls me and says, like, the bus driver is not feeling well. I'm like, all right, like, I don't know what that means. I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, he's not feeling well, and he pulled over. He doesn't want to drive anymore. I'm like, all right, thank God he's driving a 15-passenger van, not a bus. I'm only, like, you know, 5 minutes behind. And I was like, all right, I guess, like, I'll come and meet you and we'll figure it out. So I called the bus company. I was like, what's wrong with the bus driver? They're like, oh, he has a history of being a diabetic. That's the missed call, by the way, from me earlier today. So I'm like, all right, I get there, and there's like 10 kids on the van, and there's a bus counselor, and this driver, like, looks at me, and I was like, all right, he doesn't look too good, and, like, whatever, thank God everybody's parked safely. So I get the kids off the van, and I'm like, just take them down that way, like, my staff does that. And I started talking, I was like, what's wrong? He's like, I've never felt this sick in my life. And his eyes are starting to roll back and whatever. And I really thought he wasn't going to make it. And I was like, so I called Hatzala. And he's like, Michael, or Rabbi. He's like, Rabbi, pray for me, in, like, his, like, island accent. And I was like, I don't even know what to do. And he, like, put my hand on his head. So, like, I had no idea what to do. So I was like, Simcha Elokim Kefrayim Chemenashe. I don't think, like, really, those were, like, the first words that came out of my mouth. But what I thought was so fascinating was, I've known this guy for, like, five, six, 7 years, something like that. He, like, never struck me at all as, like, a religious person. But there is something about, like, crisis, or I think he thought he was going to die. Ozzy told me that he also thought he was going to die. Thank God Hatzala came quickly, and he got glucose, and they took him to the ER, and I drove to the ER afterwards, and, like, he's recovering, and I think he's going to be all right. But there is something about where you really think, like, your life is, like, coming to an end, that brings you back lifnei Hashem. I think it's innately part of, like, the human condition. But I think what happens is the Torah kind of is building it in as, like, it's more than that. It's like, it doesn't have to be when you think you're going to die, but when you sin and you recognize that you strayed from Hashem, what happens? We build into the culture of Judaism this need to get lifnei Hashem. So you could have monumental sins, and I'm not really sure that you could say Chayta Egel is worse than Baal Peor. Like, the Baal Peor story is really bad. Like they're there, and then all of a sudden, like, they do all this. It's terrible. But there's the capacity within, like, Judaism to sin even like that and come lifnei Hashem. So hopefully, our generation will be Zoche Bekarov to be once again lifnei Hashem, back in Eretz Yisrael with the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash.